Hello, and welcome to the Weekly Comic Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Bretall. In this episode, we'll be discussing recently released comics. One from DC, one from Marvel, and at least one other. As always, we'll keep major spoilers to a minimum, but we'll discuss general plot points and storylines of the comics we review.
This is Weekly Comics Spotlight 263 for comics originally released on August 22nd, 2012. Starting us off in DC is Before Watchmen, Dr. Manhattan number 1. This is part of a 4-issue miniseries. They've announced they're going to do an additional one to all the ones they've talked about. And it's going to be by Straczynski, so I'm assuming he's gotten ahead on the game on the scripts he's writing for the existing ones.
Yeah, looks like they're making some good profits on these, so they're announcing more.
Well, I think it's been reasonably well received. I mean, the first group landed not at the top of the charts, but very, very close. I think all in the top 10. The sales have fallen a little since then, but still very, very good compared to pretty much almost everything else. So it makes sense to do that. I don't think it's a big surprise. Now, if we get an After Watchmen kind of a thing, then okay, they're cashing in even further.
Well, since they're doing one a week, I'm wondering if that will give them a little bit of extra breather space. You know, if they're not going to either tag it on to the end or something else that allows them to slide this book in if some other people are delayed and they need to shuffle around their publishing schedule a little bit.
My understanding is this stuff was going to come in November, and I was assuming at the tail end, but I don't know. But anyways, as for this issue itself, I thought this was really well done. I thought it was a good story. It was great art, and I liked how it kind of tied into things like Minutemen number 1. Without really requiring that issue to be read to understand what was going on here. So it dovetailed nicely with that. Play with some interesting aspects of kind of quantum physics and probability and divergent timelines and all that kind of stuff. I think Dr. Manhattan is one of, like, the most iconic characters of Watchmen. You know, right behind, you know, Rorschach, and probably right up there with the Comedian. So I don't think people really needed to have read Watchmen to understand this. I think it stands alone very well, but I'm kind of curious how many people would have read this if they hadn't read Watchmen or seen the movie or something like that.
Yeah, well, which is probably true for a lot of these.
Oh, but certainly. It's true for almost all of them.
Yeah. I liked this issue. It, to me, read very much like the Dr. Manhattan stuff in Watchmen. Straczynski did a good job here of channeling just the narration and cadence and style of how Dr. Manhattan was handled previously. So it felt like it was really a part of that. It just read really well to me.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. This very much fit the tone, the style, the character, very much dead on. The big question I left with was sort of what direction this was going to go in. Because the note it left on gave a lot of wiggle room as to, do they go left, do they go right, do they go do almost a U-turn or whatever kind of a story direction-wise. Which is kind of cool, but, you know, we'll see where they go with it. And at this point, I'm thinking it's not which direction they go, but which directions, plural, they go. Just because of how they introduced the whole, you know, quantum timeline and, you know, things could have turned out this way or that way or this other way. I'm expecting Straczynski to kind of play around with those ideas in the other issues.
Yeah, it worked really well. What I also liked on this issue was the Adam Hughes interior art, which is not exactly like an Adam Hughes cover.
Mm-hmm.
You can see it in some of the panels, but it seemed to me like it was it's his style, but it's not as fully rendered as he tends to do on his covers. It was still really good, but I think he made a nice stylistic medium of his style to do the full page and the panel-to-panel continuity.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Because, I mean, he doesn't do that much interior work these days, does he?
I can't remember the last time I saw him do interiors on something. I mean, he's been almost exclusively a cover artist for years and years.
Yeah. But did a great job here. Again, very pleased with this.
Yeah, I mean, this was right up there. I mean, the top, one of the top books for me from this relaunch.
Yeah.
Or whatever we want to call
this,
it.
This
thing.
Yeah, this branding, this line of comics, whatever. Yeah, it's certainly not an event, but it's certainly its own little section or whatever. Really, it's just a different product line for DC at this point. And I think most of the Before Watchmen miniseries have been very solid, very, again, they got top-notch talent to do these things, which is a very smart move. This was no exception. They got great guys to do it. They did a great job. So I'm pleased with this. I would have been very disappointed if the Before Watchmen stuff seemed like they were just cranking things out to cash in on stuff and didn't give a damn about the quality. And clearly they're concerned about doing some good stuff and maintaining the reputation of Watchmen. And, you know, I'm happy with that.
Yeah, I'll be curious on, now that they've kind of opened the box on doing additional series, how much and how frequently they continue doing other stories. I wouldn't mind if they do the, I mean, I don't know that I need to have them continually doing new series, but it's not something I think I would like it if they came back to this every now and again and did a series of mini series, as long as they keep the hallmark of it, which is really, really top-notch creators who seem to have a passion for the material doing those series. What will kill this if they try to do too much of it is I don't think they could keep the caliber of talent that they've had on this on an ongoing set of series.
I think doing another series of miniseries might be a mistake. I would be cool with them doing the occasional miniseries on this, but again, like you said, they've got to keep the bar really high. It's got to be something that a creator came, pitched, and just sounded brilliant. And they would need to basically say, hey, you know, if it doesn't turn out in execution quite that well, maybe we don't publish it. In other words, come in infrequently with stories that the creators are very passionate about, are going to knock it out of the park with in other words, are safe bets in that regard. And don't over flood the market with too much stuff. Don't do just average stuff. If they can do that, I think they can come back to this periodically. Once a year with a 4-issue miniseries or something like that, and have people still excited about it. If they can find again the right stories, the right creators, and all of that, I would not want them to do kind of what they did with some of their other things, such as Amalgam was fun the first time, but when they came back the second time, it was just more of the same. You know, and they've had other things of that ilk where it was really cool the once, but when you revisit it and can't maintain the quality, the excitement, or what have you, it doesn't serve anybody.
Well, you know, like Amalgam, it had like a certain contrived nature at its very core. I mean, it's a very rich universe that they're exploring here. So if they did it right, and like I said, I wouldn't want to see continual things here, and they should certainly put some distance between the end of this and doing another one. But if they came back in a year and a half and did two or three minis, you know, if they did 10, 12 issues or something like that, I wouldn't mind it. They could do more than 12. I don't know that I'd necessarily want to see another 36, you know, every year or something like that. But the real key is, can they get the kinds of creators that have been the hallmark of this series of miniseries?
Yeah. I mean, it comes down to, can they do it really well? And if they can, that's definite influence on how many of these they could come out with and how frequently. But it's a matter of keeping that bar high. They've done well so far, but the minute it starts to feel like it's been diluted and they're just turning out yet another and the last couple were so-so or anything like that, people are going to cool on the property, and I think that would be bad for them.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I can definitely see them doing enough each go-round, if they were to come back to this, to do another trade or two, just again, to beef up that part of their back library and stuff on the trade side.
Yep, very good.
For me, this was a 4 out of 5. Good stuff.
I personally really like this one a lot. I'm going to give it the 5.
Interesting. Cool. Okay, next up is Amazing Spider-Man 692.
This was a big issue 50th anniversary. They speak to the fact in the back that, you know, they say, comics historians will point out that Amazing Fantasy 15 was actually cover dated August. So the issue actually went on sale in June, most likely, but we've chosen August as the date that most longtime fans recognize as the anniversary. And they add a little, besides, we had a big lizard story that we were trying to get in June and, you know, we didn't want to interrupt that. So here we go. We've got 50 years of Spider-Man and a nice big sized 50th issue. We had a couple of stories in here. I liked the main story in here has this new superhero Alpha, and they're telling an origin story, and they're trying, you know, really hard to draw Peter Parker parallels here back to Spider-Man's origin. And I'm going to give them a lot of latitude on where they're going with this. They could, you know, from this setup, I mean, there were some contrived bits, but I'll kind of run with that. It's how the story is going to play out that's going to be the big, you know, the big telling part of this. Because they could go down, you could say this about almost any kind of multi-part story, I guess. You know, they could go down several different paths, and some of those I would really like. Some of those, you know, probably wouldn't hit me that well. But Slott gets a lot of latitude with me because he's been telling such great Spider-Man stories that I have great confidence in him that he'll do something that is not just what I would expect and is something that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, Slott's been doing a great job on Amazing Spider-Man. He's just a very talented writer in general. I love some of the stuff he did over on She-Hulk and a few other places. But, I mean, like you said, a lot of this comes down to where are they going with this? And frankly, that was one of my disappointments in this issue, is it ended not on the words to be continued, but very much on that kind of a note with a, hey, there is more to this story. And then, you know, you flip a page or two, you hit the staple of the book, and they've started a different story. And, I mean, they had half this issue, which they could have devoted to continuing this tale. Now, obviously, it's probably going to go for many, many issues across the different, you know, I was going to say different Spider-Man titles, but these days we just have the one. But you know what I mean? More than just the rest of this issue might have been able to hold. But it left me hanging and not in the greatest of ways. I mean, like you said, this was not a bad story. It was an interesting kind of a modern twist to Spider-Man's origin, seeing another character kind of coming in behind him, similar-ish kind of an accident, very different powers, more... I'm going to say similar to kind of like Gravity and Speedball, some kind of hybrid combination there. And it was fun. It was interesting. But again, left me hanging. And I mean, the whole bit with the Parker particles, I thought that was kind of funny because the minute I heard that term, I'm like, well, what do they do? Cause bad luck? But I mean, it was fun. I do have faith in Dan Slott that this is going to have some good payoff and be interesting. But I would have liked more of the story in this issue. That was, to me, the big frustration.
Yeah, I think that the reason that they don't have more than one issue worth of it in here is that Slott is telling this arc with Humberto Ramos. And they didn't have, you know, more pages by Ramos to stick in here. So, you know, they chose, instead of doing it longer, to, you know, give you a 22-page installment and then... fill out the rest of the issue with this other story by Dean Haspiel. Actually, no, that's
two other stories. They
have two other stories. One by Dean Haspiel and one by Josh Fialkov and Nuno Platti.
The Dean Haspiel one, Spider-Man for a Night, I mean, the opening kind of iconically places it in time, which I thought was cool. I thought it was an okay story, but not great, and frankly, one that went on a little bit longer than I felt it needed to, and we've seen this sort of thing before, somebody kind of impersonating Spider-Man and getting both the pros and the cons to that, and Spider-Man will probably feel the pros and the cons of it too, you know? It didn't do a whole lot for me, and it wasn't bad, though.
It was an okay story.
Yeah.
It was not a great story, I didn't think, but it was an okay story. It, you know, it was the kind of story that I, you know, you wouldn't mind seeing as a backup on a comic just because that was an okay little story. Now the other one by Josh Fialkov, that one I think it played on a lot of the Peter Parkery tropes that we've got going on. It had some really fun moments in it, and I liked it. It had some heart to it, but again, this is a plus and a minus, right? It's the kind of story you've seen before, but for an anniversary issue of Spider-Man, I don't mind getting, some more of what I've seen before. I mean, because that's the kind of story that, that's the standard story for Spider-Man. I love Spider-Man, so.
Yeah.
I liked this story. He had some, the moments he had with Ben, the stuff with the little kid, those were fun character moments for Peter Spider-Man.
Well, this was almost nothing but those sorts of character moments. And I thought they kind of overplayed the Parker Luck aspect a bit too much. And, I mean, I get that it's classic Spider-Man, and you're right, it does totally fit in this kind of an issue to have a story with these sorts of things, and even to overplay it a bit, because it's iconic Spider-Man aspect. But when you've got that kind of splash page, and it's saying that, he's got to get ready for this guest lecture or whatever, the way they kind of set it up, I was thinking he was literally on the way to the guest lecturing gig, and maybe that's not the case, because if so, he never gets there, and, there's no consequences for that. But it sure seemed like he was trying to get across town in time from, missing the lecture he's supposed to be giving. And then I guess he actually misses it and doesn't really care, but it seemed like that part of the story got dropped out quickly.
Well, he did make the phone call and say, that guest lecture, I'm not going to make it. So, I mean, once he made the call saying he's not going to make it, then it was like, okay, well, I'm not going to make it, so now let me go do this other stuff.
Yeah. It just seemed like that was, because it seemed like early on with the Spider-Man stuff, it was always, he's got to get across town to get Aunt May's medicine or some kind of life or death, errand to go run or something. And for him to basically chalk up the errand as, it's just not going to happen. I don't know, that didn't quite work for me.
I looked at it as, it's different than you need to get Aunt May's medicine, because in that case, if you're 30 minutes late or something, you just get her medicine 30 minutes late, unless it's, she's going to die.
If you're cutting it that close on getting the medicine, you're kind of a bad nephew anyway.
She's not going to die in the next 30 minutes, you're okay, right? Here, a lecture, you got a bunch of kids sitting around in the room, and if you're going to be 30 minutes late, you might as well not do it, because they're not going to, be sitting around for 30 minutes waiting for you to get to the lecture, right? I mean, the main professor is going to either do something else and you reschedule.
Yeah.
So that's why I didn't mind that aspect, that just, things happen.
If they'd at least cut back to it at some point with the professor having, obviously built up the great Peter Parker was coming, and then, we're going to have this instead of something. I don't know. I mean, I get what you're saying. It just, it felt like the story was too heavy on the bad Parker Luck, not much with the real consequences. The whole bit with the kid at the end, again, seemed to drag on a little too long for me. And part of it is both this story and the previous one, I felt, were interruptions, digressions from what they'd set up in the first half of the book. It wasn't that the stuff was bad, but again, it might have been more interesting if they'd continued with the Alpha storyline. And I also think they set up certain expectations with the cover here. The cover I have, it shows him in the various different costumes he's worn over the years. It would have been nice to have had some kind of a touch point to that in the stories, in the issue somewhere.
Yeah. I mean, so you fell prey to mismet expectations.
Yeah, pretty much. Some of which were actually set in the issue itself. But, yeah.
I mean, again, when you have an issue with backups, it's kind of like getting an anthology, right? I mean,
yes,
you wanted
exactly.
More, you liked the main story. You wanted more of the main story. You lose. You're not going to get more of the main story because we've got 22 pages of it. It was like that Batman issue that we talked about a few weeks ago that, Lenny was really upset because he didn't like the art change, whereas we didn't mind the art change that happened. But I think the art change that happened in that one was because Becky Cloonan could do the 20 pages in a month. And if you want to have the longer story, you're going to have a different artist on the end of it. And, you know, what we've got here is the same kind of thing. You can get, you know, this 20, 22 pages of Humberto Ramos on this. So you're either going to put some backups in here or switch an artist on this story, which I think it's logistically, they're probably looking up that, you know, Alpha is going to be a trade paperback at some point, and they don't want to change artists.
But they've done that a lot of times in the past, changing artists because it was rotating through different books.
They absolutely have.
And was Humberto Ramos doing part of the Lizard arc, or could they have simply started him working on this story earlier? Could they have worked the scheduling to have allowed this to be a full page or full issue story is the question. Maybe they could have, maybe they couldn't have. But for an anniversary issue, I thought this was a little unimpressive. I mean, that to me is the bottom line. It was not a bad issue, but to play it up as the 50th year anniversary celebration, et cetera, whatever, it was okay. Yeah, I felt they pulled out the stops more on the issue 600s and stuff like that. And in fairness, we're not that far from an issue 700, which they'll probably no doubt pull out the stops on that too. So, well, I mean, for me, it was a low 4 out of 5.
This is our grading scales, right? Because I gave it a 4 out of 5 too. So I liked it a lot. I gave it a 4. You had a lot of problems. You give it the same 4. So,
okay, you're right. I should give it a 3. It's 3 it is.
You should give it, you should, because you had a lot of problems with this issue. So,
it also had a lot more content than most issues that I would consider average. So, I mean, for me, it was right between a high 3 and a low 4. So, we'll give it the 3.
I gave it a solid 4. I liked it. I liked the Josh Fial Cup story a lot. So, Didn't mind having it in there. Now, our next one, Rocketeer Cargo of Doom. This is one where I fell prey to the mismatched expectations bugaboo. I was really looking forward to Mark Waid and Chris Samnee on a Rocketeer story. And, you know, I had, you know, built this up into some almost legendary creature in my mind, you know, because I love Waid. Samnee has been knocking it out of the park for me on a lot of things. And I got an okay issue. You know, I thought it was kind of slow moving for, you know, the first issue kicking off the series. You know, there's a lot of character stuff where they're setting up Cliff and Peavy's niece. You know, the rescue scene was okay. It wasn't that dynamic. At least it didn't feel really dynamic to me. It was an okay issue, but I was not wowed by this issue.
Interesting. I really liked the setup of Sally, Peavy's niece and stuff. I thought she got a lot of great characterization in this issue. I thought the opening with the rescue scene and stuff like that was a legitimate way to start an issue with an action scene that didn't seem, you know, too forced or too contrived or requiring a, and let's roll back to see how we got up to this. I thought Waid and Samnee were a great fit for this. I mean, Waid delivered a lot of story and characterization in this issue without it seeming too busy or crowded or convoluted or anything like that. And I thought Samnee's art was a great fit for this material. So I was very pleased with this. I liked it, frankly, a lot more than the anthology things they've been doing.
There is that. I did like it more than the anthologies. I wish this would have had a bigger action set piece to it. It just didn't feel to me like it started off with a bang for a first issue. And Waid, for me, usually has, you know, it feels like he's got a little better pacing to his first issues where I feel like I get a big set piece, something. I can't really put my finger on it. It seemed like an okay issue to me. I was not wowed by it.
The action sequence at the beginning was really the action sequence of the issue. And the issue didn't end off on a high action note. I mean, we see him get into the rocket pack and stuff, but he's basically just flying up to the top of a hangar or something to go talk to Sally. So I can see where the end of the issue, you may have felt it just fell flat that way. To me, I liked the fact that we got a lot of characterization. They moved the story along, and this felt a lot fuller than your average comic.
So I would have liked to see the bad guys positioned as a little bit more of a threat or something in this issue. I mean, it's like, okay, without...
They seem disconnected to the Rocketeer part of the issue.
Right. You don't that see how it's going to play in. It wasn't a bad issue. It's just, I thought it was an okay issue.
Interesting. Again, for me, I was very pleased with it. I thought it was fun. I think they need to think about how much Rocketeer stuff they do at IDW. They've been doing a lot lately. And this is another one where maybe if they'd spaced out this from the Rocketeer Adventures a little or something like that, that might have worked a little better. Because it seems like we're just off the heels of a previous Rocketeer thing, and it's coming in regular monthly installments or whatever, or close enough that there's not the, oh yeah, I'm glad they brought this back aspect to it. So I think if they were to do these a little further between, dole it out a little slower, it would feel a little more special when it comes.
Yeah.
But I'm glad they got a really good creative team on this. For me, it was a very solid 4 out of 5.
See, I'm on that border between a 3 and a 4 like you were on the Spider-Man.
It sounds very clear that it's 3 for you. You thought, literally, you said it was just average.
Yeah, and I actually, I was sitting there looking at my IDW solicits for November, and issue 4 solicited, and I actually had a thought in my mind of, do I want to order number 4? Which is weird, you know, because I should be just, like, it should be an automatic buy for me. The fact that that question even came up in my mind tells me that, you know, there was something about this issue that, you know, I had to step back and think about it.
I would hazard to guess it's the lack of action, particularly in the later half of the story.
Yeah.
Between that and the villains feeling a bit disconnected, this was like you were just peering in on the Rocketeer's, you know, day in the life of kind of thing.
Yeah, you know, that's, and to me, that's the kind of thing that you put in an issue 3 or 4 of a series, not in an issue 1.
Yeah.
You want to just drag somebody into the story in issue 1. And like I said, I mean, that's sort of atypical for Wade, because he usually does a really good job at that kind of pacing and, you know, the kind of thing where he's just getting me immediately engaged with the story.
So you're going to go with the 3 then?
Yeah, I'm going to go with the 3 on this one.
Okie doke. So what else did you read this week?
Well, I read a book that I don't think you got. Which is Batman Incorporated number 3.
As I it did not come in my shipment.
Yeah, but, DCBS, yeah. For some reason, because I sent them an email. I guess they didn't get the memo or something on when they're supposed to release it. Because a lot of people I know who will go with DCS, you know, they're talking about, oh, I didn't get it. And it's like, well, it was out at the shop. It was out at all the shops. And they did not ship it in that shipment. So...
Yeah, what had happened with that is it was supposed to come out right on the heels of the Colorado theater shooting for the Batman movie, and they felt it would be in bad taste to release that issue at that point. But that on that Monday, when it had kind of already gotten through the pipeline, they basically had Diamond alert the retailers through Diamond Daily and one or two other channels of, hey, please don't release this, hold on to it for a month. And they had been invoiced the following week. They got uninvoiced, and then on the 22nd or whatever, they got invoiced again and could release it. So it was a very atypical kind of release methodology for this. So I'm not surprised that it kind of threw DCBS for a loop, because they're probably used to get boxes from Diamond, open boxes from Diamond, put on table, put into shipments, send out, and then oh wait, we've got this other thing to do. You know. They'll get it the next week.
I'll be curious on what you think of this issue when you actually see it. I really think that there was a serious overreaction on DC's part.
I
don't know if you saw that one page that they released on the internet.
Yeah, I have. I know why they held off.
That's the only thing in this entire book. It's like a teacher in a classroom. It's on the very first page of the issue, and she's holding a gun in 2 panels.
Yeah.
Nobody gets shot. There's no shooting. There's no theme of mass violence, well, I mean, any more so than any Batman comic book, right? But there's no people getting shot, particularly in this issue. There's no kids getting shot. There's nobody. It just...
Do you remember the story point it left on in issue 2?
At this point, no.
Damien had been shot in the face.
Yeah, well, that's not...
At the end of the previous issue, he was thought to be dead. I would hope somewhere in that issue they allude to the fact, hey, you know, people think you're dead or whatever. I think, was it an overreaction? Did they need to delay the issue for a month? No, they didn't need to. Whether it's an overreaction is a little trickier. I think it was a smart move for them to have delayed it a month, just to put a little space between that and to avoid the possibility of it getting a negative media reaction, because they managed at DC to pretty much stay out of the limelight on that whole story. And there's no good that would have come to them having accidentally inserted themselves into that mass shooting, you know, incident narrative in the media, which probably would not have happened, might not have happened, but why risk it? I mean, I don't think they had to delay the issue for a month. I don't think it was necessarily a horrible overreaction for them to have done so. Yeah. Better safe than sorry. I don't think there was anything from what I've heard that was in there that was so scandalous or
when you read it, you tell me if you think there's anything whatsoever in here. I mean, I don't see it.
I didn't expect there would be, to be honest. I felt that they had thought they'd strayed close enough to the edge of that story, potentially in this issue, that somebody could have dug something out and made a big to-do about, you know, a teacher having a gun in school or whatever. Why do that? Why not just, you know, put a little space between the story and the issue and, you know, the news story of the shooting and stuff, that tragedy, and just sidestep it entirely? I don't think that was a bad business decision. Again, was it an overreaction? Yeah, probably. But better that overreaction than release something on the heels of a horrible, you know, tragedy at the theater and stuff, and have some group wanting to get some publicity make a big to-do about it for some silly reason. It just, I can see why they made the decision they did, and I don't think it was a horrible decision. Whether it was a necessary one, I would agree, yeah, maybe not. But err on the side of caution on that. I don't think that's a bad move.
Well, we can agree to disagree. I'll say interesting, which is what you say when you disagree with me. So I will, we can agree.
Normally I say something's interesting because I find it legitimately interesting. And sometimes I find your views fascinating.
I'm a fascinating guy. Now that you reminded me that Damien had been shot at the end of issue 2, there is no reference to it whatsoever in this issue.
That I find fascinating because that seems like a bad idea to not mention what happened in the previous issue, particularly when it was such a big story point.
It's been long enough since I read that issue at this point.
The part that gets me is this is still going on the whole Leviathan plotline or whatever, which is another long-lost secret society that's kind of taking over Gotham. Right around, but apparently during the same half-century or whatever that the Court of Owls has been doing that. It's like, just how many secret societies are there in Gotham, and how come they're not tripping all over each other?
They have, they coordinate, you know. They plan their secret meetings. They don't conflict, and you get more Bat-Cow in this issue, though.
Joy.
I know how much you loved Bat-Cow.
I thought that was pretty lame. So I read a couple other things this week. We got the second half of the Truth About Tribbles storyline in Star Trek number 12. I enjoyed that. I thought that was fun. A nice moment that story kind of ended on. It was kind of related, kind of not. We got the third issue of America's Got Powers. I'm continuing to enjoy that. Wish that would come out a little more on time than it had been, but, you know, at least it's still coming out. Super Crooks, got the final issue of that. I thought that was a decent end with a twist or two in there. Not something that I think everybody's got to read, but, you know, it was better than I was afraid it might have been. I did not have high hopes for that. I didn't think it started particularly strong. I think it ended stronger than it started.
Is it over, or is it?
Yeah, it was the fourth issue of four.
Oh, okay.
Big finale is what it says on the bottom of the cover. So it finished the story, so yeah.
I didn't read that past one, so.
I kind of figured. Punisher 14, been really enjoying that. I got into that series after we had read the Omega Effect crossover between Spider-Man and Daredevil and Punisher. I'd only read the first three issues. I went back and picked up the others and have read it and stuff. And Greg Rucka's doing some really great work. I'm not an intrinsic Punisher fan, but he's telling a fascinating story there. There are a couple things where the timeline jumps a bit odd or whatever, and if I hadn't been reading the previously on to find where they had inserted a few things that hadn't really happened previously, which I feel was a little bit of a writing cheat, but okay, you want to move the story forward, I get that. But great, great series, enjoying that a lot more than I had originally expected. It was a slow burn at the start. It took a while for the Punisher to really kind of, I think, take center stage and take over the series, if you will. And then finally, second issue of Hero Worship from Avatar. This is one I'm really loving. Great series, and also one that I almost didn't pick up. Because, I mean, Avatar is one of the few companies in comics, few publishers, that I think has kind of successfully, almost by de facto, not necessarily through intent, established a pretty clear brand and what kind of comics they produce. They tend to be a bit more graphically violent, a bit more edgier, harder core, darker, if you will, than your average kind of publisher or whatever. And this comic, while it strays into that territory, is not the blood fest or whatever that is the impression I get about some of their other titles. Whereas if this same thing had come out from Image, I don't think I'd have blinked twice, I'd have just ordered it. But I was cautious about, do I want to get this? I even at San Diego Comic-Con talked to one of the people at the booth of how graphically violent is it going to get, and she pretty much had no idea, which was unfortunate. But, you know, I took a risk. I've been enjoying it. It's good stuff.
They do tend to have a house style that you're not unwarranted on having that kind of concern.
Well, and to me, that's the branding they've kind of established, is you kind of know what to expect from an Avatar book. Whereas, I mean, can you say that there's a typical Image book? No, of course not.
I wouldn't say that there's a typical Image, Dark Horse, or IDW book, or even Dynamite. You know, these things are kind of all over the map. Avatar pretty consistently has some wild out there, bloody violent kind of books.
Yeah. So it's that successful branding that almost cost them the sale to me, which is kind of ironic. I'm glad they're publishing this book. I hope it doesn't turn into something that's a typical Avatar book, because that's not what I'm into. But, you know, we'll see where it goes. So far, it's been, I think, very well thought out and a good read. So how about you? Anything else?
Other than the ones you read, I mean, I like those. Knights of the Dinner Table, they've got a pretty interesting storyline going on in there that I like with Nitro and his Pee-wee League of characters that he's getting ready for regionals. You stopped reading that book at some point,
oh, yeah.
I think.
Oh yeah.
That book is an acquired taste for people who are gamers. You know, kind of more active, you know, playing gamer type of people. Invincible 94 I really liked. Glamour Puss number 26 ended off that title's run, which I had been getting at first, then I dropped, and then Lenny talked me into going back on, and it's like what I'd been doing with that book is I kind of skip over the first half of each issue that is sort of a, you know, the fashion, the fashion parody kind of part of the issue, and then I kind of dive into the second half of the issue, which for a while now has been the strange death of Arnold Drake or something like that. It's just like it's a very detailed accounting of Arnold Drake and he was in a car accident and died, and he was driving with Alex Raymond. You know, they're both big comic strip artists, very, very renowned, and he's just been kind of going through all kinds of speculation and analysis of, you know, the interrelationship between these two iconic comic strip artists who both lived in the same area in, I believe it's upstate New York. And he's been doing a kind of style in the vein of these guys, which is kind of a photorealism kind of style. And it's just been fascinating to me. I've really been loving that. If he does a collection of that at some point, which he very well might do, I will definitely get that so I can reread it all in one piece. But he pretty much finished up that story, and then he ended this particular book, and I guess he'll be now focusing on getting his digital Serapis out the door. Which, interestingly, they had a little setback on that. That was a Kickstarter campaign.
Uh-huh.
As you may recall, there was a fire. The guy that they had been having do a lot of the work, his apartment building burned down, and they lost like 2,000 negatives
that
they had been scanning the stuff from. The guy's okay, but he lost all his stuff, and he lost all this work. So they had a lot of the stuff scanned in. They have digital backups of it, but they're now missing probably about the last 10 issues of Church and State at this point. So, that's something that they'll need to recover from. On the plus side, I'd made this statement, and then they came out like a couple of days later with a similar statement officially, is that, the advantage to doing a digital comic like this is, well, you can release the thing and just have the last 10 issues be lower quality scans, and then if you get better scans at a later date that are, when you collect up the original art and get like much sharper scans, then you can just push out a new, make it available and push out an update.
Upgrade it's not the like, issue, yeah.
Exactly. It's not like, once you print a comic and it's like physically sent out, getting that upgrade into people's hands, there's an additional cost to, other than like the download bandwidth, allowing people to upgrade their book once they've got the digital copy of it is relatively cost free. So it's not something I had actually thought of that much before. So that'll be kind of cool. And what I really like about the digital Serapis anyway is that it wasn't just the digital comic, but they're putting lots of extra material, Dave Sim's sketchbooks and notes, and he'll actually be doing a commentary track on what he was thinking, and kind of like when you listen to a director's commentary track on a movie, mm-hmm. like that kind of thing. Plus, I think he was going to be reading the issues as well, and so there'd be just an audio, kind of like book on tape aspect to it also. So there was a lot of kind of cool things that they were going to be doing with the digital service. It'll still be happening.
Anything else? Does that pretty much do it?
I think that does it for me.
Cool.
Join us next week when we discuss Phantom Lady number 1 from DC, Winter Soldier number 9 from Marvel, and Steed and Peel number 0 from Boom Studios.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.